And the third thing that we learn from this passage is that if and when the prophet is ready to take the initiative and let the kings, Jewish and non-Jewish, know that there is a prophet in Israel ready to heal the moral sickness that plagues the world, the result is Kiddush Hashem, the sanctification of God's name. And my dear Musmachim, old and young, or rather young and not so young, what held true for Elisha the prophet holds true for each of you. Lead, for heaven's sake. Lead, l'shem shamayim. V'yeda ki yesh navi b'Yisrael. Let the world know there is a new and reinvigorated and energetic and authentic rabbinate, that there are still prophets in Israel. There is hardly a greater Kiddush Hashem than the awakening awareness that Rabbonus is alive and well and that Torah thrives in Israel.
This is Jeffrey Sachs, editor of Tradition and our recent Rabbi Norman Lamb Memorial Volume. That unmistakable voice was Rabbi Lamb, Zichrono Levracha, speaking at Yeshiva University's 1986 Centennial Chag HaSmicha. In this episode of our podcast, we explore his energetic rabbinic leadership and his message and challenge to his rabbinic colleagues and students. My guests each contributed an essay on these themes to the Memorial Volume and are distinguished rabbinic leaders in their own rights. Rabbi Menachem Penner is the Max and Marion Grill Dean of the Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary at YU, and Rabbi Dr. Benjamin Samuels has been the rabbi of Congregation Shari Tfilah in Newton, Massachusetts since 1995 and teaches widely in the greater Boston Jewish community.
Welcome to the Tradition Podcast, Rabbi Menachem Penner and Rabbi Dr. Benji Samuels. It's nice to be here with you talking about the legacy of our great teacher, Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, Zichrono Levracha. You each contributed an essay to our recent memorial volume, which were complimentary. You were speaking about his relationship to the rabbinate as whole, and particularly in your case, Menachem, you were talking about his addresses at the Chagei Smicha, at the quadrennial, or however frequently they happen these days, the quadrennial celebrations, which we just recently celebrated at Yeshiva University, at our alma mater, at Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, where we send off the new crop of young rabbis, freshly minted, off into the world to do God's work. So first of all, congratulations to you and to all of us on that great occasion, which was, delayed because of Corona, but it allowed a bumper crop of young people going out. And I must commend to our listeners' attention your particularly powerful address, which must have felt the great weight of those that are no longer with us, who had once stood on that stage on those occasions and presented. So before we get into discussing Rabbi Lamb's message to the Rabbonim, just tell our listeners who should now go off and listen to the recording, what is it that you were trying to say to the young Musmachim last week?
I think sometimes that And this is very much in the line of what Rabbi Lamb said, having had a chance with this memorial volume to review Rabbi Lamb's drushas and to understand that there are aspects of the rabbinate, there are things that sometimes go unsaid, and they need to be said at grand events like the Chag HaSmicha. And one of the things that we're seeing is just a shortage of young people who are going into Avodas HaKodesh. And I spoke actually the week before to the fellows in the Beis Medrash, as did Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, who's the head of the Smicha program, we always do this around the time of the Chag HaSmicha, to say you need to be thinking about going into Avodas HaKodesh. It's not necessarily for you, but you need to be thinking about it, because we simply need a lot more people to be doing, to be in shuls, to be in schools, to be doing outreach. My message to the Musmachim was that even though you already have positions, we need you to do much more than just what your job description says, to be thinking of building rather than simply doing and fulfilling your responsibilities, to see your pulpits, your schools as sort of a launching pad, as sort of the main course, but then to use that to branch out in a lot of different directions. And I think that's something that very much was in the spirit of Rabbi Lam's Chag HaSmicha drushes over the years.
Well, it was watching from afar, I can tell you it was a very inspiring, and I'm sure for those in the room, a particularly impactful speech. Benji, in your piece, you, among other things, explore Rabbi Lam's essays about the rabbinate and rabbinic leadership. You also touch on some of those drashot and speeches that he gave at Chagei Smicha. But you focus on a particular piece that he actually said while visiting England in 1968 to a group of British rabbis. And of course, Britain is always it's an island unto itself in more ways than one. And they wrestle with their issues and challenges in Jewish life and learning in their own way. And you point to something, you quote Rabbi Lam as saying, you know, in these conversations, I'm often tempted to fall into the Purim spiel version of imitating his very distinctive voice, but I'll hold back. Rabbi Lam says, the rabbinate today has fallen upon hard times. In the last year or two, there have appeared a number of articles announcing the imminent demise of the rabbinate. And Benji, you point to this as the trope of the near defeated prophet. When I read this initially, it struck me as so odd because Rabbi Lam was often so very optimistic, and very many of the charges that he gave to those of us he was sending off into the world was about the great potential that we had and the challenge that laid before us that he knew we could meet if we apply ourselves with all of our talents and with the support of the institution at our back. But there's no doubt there's this kind of back and forth between a sense of optimism and a kind of sense of actually pessimism, you know, your near defeated prophet idea. So tell us about that theme and how he balanced it out in creating a full picture. How much of that was rhetoric? How much of that was an attempt to convince his listeners of the severe challenges of the day, while at the same time giving them the courage to go forward?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. Was it just a rhetorical trope for Rabbi Lam, or was he really making an assessment of the situation? And I think the answer is yes and no, right? We just heard Rav Mark share his thoughts about what went into his mind when he was creating his Chag HaSmicha drasha, and the awareness or the perception that we don't have enough of the young men who graduate from our yeshiva going into Avodas HaKodesh, and yet every year we're still filling our shuls and filling our schools with people. So I don't mean Chas V'Shalom, Rav Menachem, to diminish your astute observation, but that also is a valence, so to speak, of will we surmount the challenges of the time and amass the needed professionals, individuals, talmidei chachamim, obdei Hashem, to fulfill the needs of our generation at hand, and so it is a rhetorical trope that energizes people, that speaks to what sometimes is known as the imposter syndrome. I'm not worthy enough to go into this profession. I'm not up to the task, for which we hear the reverberations from Hashem within ourselves, from our teachers and colleagues, and even our students, of Chazak Be'ematz, be of good courage, be strong, be resolute. You are uniquely situated and skilled and capacitated for the tasks at hand. So on the one hand, I do believe that it's a real phenomenon that he's addressing, and yet at the same time, it is a rhetorical trope for us to really consider and be energized and inspired so that we can rise up and meet the challenges we face.
I think when you read his drushes, especially drushes in the royal reach and things of that time, I think we have to recognize how fortunate we are, because again, while we need more people to go into the field, I don't even think it's that less are going into the field, just Baruch Hashem, our communities
the need is grow,
and we're just looking, right, we're just looking at the openings and just seeing what we need. But I think that, you know, much of Rabbi Lam's approach to the community was formed in the 60s and the 70s, and those drushes in the Jewish Center, the masterful drushes. And he was looking at a situation that he and the Rav had emuna, and biblical characters to call upon, especially the Eliyahus, who looked like there was no chance for their derech to win out.
Right.
No chance that their derech would win out. And it was with a sort of emuna that if we stick to the course, we're going to end up in a different place. And you look at the, you know, the drushas, that particular drusha from England was in the 1960s. And then you hear some of the, I think, as you know, you put in your article, some of the triumphant days of sort of modern orthodoxy as you get into the 80s and the 90s. I think he was proved right.
Yeah.
But I think that sort of that pessimism was almost a look at reality. Looking, you know, at the 60s and the 70s was sort of I think that was a realistic look at what was before him and the task that was before him. But yet, very often calling on these biblical figures, whether they be Moshe, whether they be Eliyahu, and to see how one figure who stands his ground can be proven right over the decades. And I think that's
well, actually, I wanted to come back to this because you both touch upon it in your respective articles. In terms of this model of the near defeated prophet, there's no doubt that Eliyahu HaNavi is a model that he returned to again and again as this kind of rabbinic hero in many of the Chag HaSmicha addresses, in many other conversations about leadership. In most of the cases, you each, whether you were looking at written texts or you were accessing the transcripts or the recordings of speeches that are available on the Lamb Heritage Archives, we're looking almost exclusively at things that begin as oral presentations. And he returns again and again to this model of Eliyahu HaNavi, Malachapo Eliyahu. What are you doing? Get out there, lead Laman Hashem, lead for heaven's sake. Get up, do something. Act this kind of vigorous, enthusiastic charge that he sends him. So what do you each think that he saw in Eliyahu that he kept coming back again, time and again, to this model of Eliyahu? On other occasions, he speaks about Avraham, he speaks about Moshe, but Eliyahu seemed to fascinate him as a model of anachronistic as it is, as Eliyahu is a model of contemporary rabbinic leadership.
So I think there are many touch points and resonances with the figure of Eliyahu and the relationship of Eliyahu to his people and then as a teacher and empower of Elisha. But I'll touch on one, and this was a theme of my essay that I experienced with Rabbi Lamb myself and then saw as a theme throughout many of his writings, this kind of balancing of emet and shalom, or of chesed and gura, of ahavat ha-Torah and ahavat Yisrael. Eliyahu was a man of principle. He was demanding and exacting, and yet he had to be schooled in chesed and do walkabouts and see the people on the ground and experience their suffering so he could have compassion on them. I think that Rabbi Lamb had a capacity for compassion, and yet at the same time, he was an Isha Emet. He was a man of great principle and standards and expectations and aspirations. And so Eliyahu is this figure, this typology almost, of trying to balance these sometimes conflicting demands of Emet and Shalom, of compassion and exactitude. And that's something that all of us as Rabbanim struggle with, whether we're in the field of Rabbanus ministering to our communities or in Chinuch and trying to raise up the next generation of learners.
Right. I think also for Rabbi Lamb, there's sort of our sort of three critical moments in Eliyahu's life that made him such an attractive figure to speak about. First of all, I think all of us have been influenced by the ability of Rabbi Lamb to use stories from Tanakh, from Nach. Personally, I've made that much of what I do. The stories I try to tell the Talmidim here, you know, a Haftorah, even sometimes from the Nevi'im Achronim, you just have to tell it over in a dramatic way and give a 1 minute. You have a drusha right there. I mean, these stories
The stories do the work themselves almost.
But there are several stories. First of all, the Har Carmel. And the idea that the troops need to be rallied. And I think that that's something that's not done enough within REITs, within the YU world. I think very often we take for granted what we have. We don't celebrate what we have. We don't feel like a movement, like a group. But there's no better group of Rabbanim out there than the graduates of Yeshiva. I mean, when you actually get together and you start to celebrate, we're a cynical group by nature. And there are many reasons why we're a cynical group. But when you actually get together, and I think that's what happens at a Chag HaSmicha, and you say, wow, we have something to say. We have a message that needs to go beyond our institution, both to those who are not affiliated and those who are to the right of us. We have something to say, and we have the messengers to do that. So first of all, that image on Har Carmel of making a grand speech, making it grand, the power of a moment, which Rabbi Lamb was able so often to capture. There's a book out there, The Power of Moments, where they actually quote something unrelated, but from the Reitz program, which is fascinating. But that the power of moments, the power to capture, the second that you get from Eliyahu is it's rare to see a biblical figure who is so burnt out from his work. Maybe you get a little Yirmiyahu. I don't know that he spent as much time on Yirmiyahu, but rarely do you see a biblical figure. You see Moshe Rabbeinu make mistakes, but you don't necessarily see him burnt out. And I think that
you see moments of near despair, but
near despair. I mean, really, to see that moment of Eliyahu, and I think that was a real, you know, I think you saw Rabbi Lamb projecting his own frustrations and his own, you know, his own life and his own despair at times, and the handoff to Elisha, which is such a dramatic moment of teacher and student. And the intimate conversations that they have on the way out, and what Elisha asks of Eliyahu, that handoff. So all of those pieces, I think, made Eliyahu, in addition to what Rabenji was saying, made him a very attractive figure for Rabbi Lamb to mine again and again and again.
Right. So let me ask you a related, yeah, I'm sorry, Benji, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, in the early 90s, when I had this 2-year window of a rather intense relationship with Rabbi Lamb, when I was the assistant rabbi at the Jewish Center, and that's where he davened, and I got to know him during that time on a much more personal basis. I remember one time he asked me who was the most unpopular leader in the history of Israel, and certainly Eliyahu was persecuted. We see that, but I, you know, and Rabbi Lamb loved the clever twist and the surprise, you know, shock of an answer. And I don't remember what I said, but the punchline was Moshe Rabbeinu, right? He said there was never a more unpopular leader and never a greater leader. Right. So on the one hand, I think there were moments in Rabbi Lamb's own career and profile as a leader in the modern Orthodox community, that he did feel persecuted. I mean, he references it in the essays that I studied for our piece. Right. And yet at the same time, I think he would remind himself and then remind the Musmachim that whether you are resonating with the experience of Moshe Rabbeinu or that of Eliyahu HaNavi, right? Don't forget the mission and don't forget the bigger picture. You are here for a purpose and you will accomplish it. And at the end of the day, you will be remembered, right, for your love of Israel, for your love of Torah, for your hishtadlus, and those moments of persecution will disappear into the footnotes.
In my essay in the volume about Rabbi Lamb's writings on the topic of modern and centrist orthodoxy, I quote him as saying that he was very pluralistic. He was an equal opportunity target. He's been attacked from both the left and the right. Menachem, in your piece, you point to this specific his maiden address at the Chag HaSmicha in his first at bat as president and Rosh HaYeshiva in 1978. Another opportunity in which he spoke, perhaps the first one, at least in this context, in which he explores the Eliyahu themes. And after Eliyahu's, you know, near hitting rock bottom, Hashem sends him on this mission to Syria. And you spell out, I invite the readers to read it at some length in your piece, you spell out that by sending Elijah to Syria, God reminded Elijah that there was an alternative model of Jewish leadership. Until then, he'd been trying to emulate the model of Moses. Now, that of Abraham, who had descended from Aram to preach to the wayward population of Canaan. Abraham led not through showmanship, but through individual acts of kindness, not through setting high expectations for his recruits, but through unconditional love. And it's through this transformative process, through adopting a new model and method, that Eliyahu is able to climb out of that pit of despair. And, you know, no doubt it's been, I mean, I shudder to think that it's been almost 30 years since we were together as students in Ritz. It's been a long time since our own Chag HaSmicha. And the messages change, the essential vision, the essential values are certainly timeless, but the models change. And there's a time for Avraham's, and there's a time for Moshe's, and there's a time for Eliyahu's, who can try to transfer between one and the other pole. And I'm just curious, from your perch, Menachem, as somebody who's entrusted with the education and training of the next generation of rabbis, and Benji, from your perch, as someone who has been in the active rabbinate now for 30 years, how do you see these models having shifted from the time we were the young musmachim at the Chagei Smicha until today? What do you think the modes of leadership that are most needed now?
If I'll start, I think that, you know, a lot of the battles, as I mentioned before, that Rabbi Lam spoke of, the battles with his powerful balabatim on many issues of the day, have sort of been fought. They've been won. Obviously, we need to continue to maintain our principles, our values, our priorities, especially when the world outside is changing so quickly. And we're constantly being bombarded with new ways of looking at things. Sometimes we need to be open to them, but they need to be seen through a Torah perspective. But I think that some of the major battles that Rabbi Lam fought, especially in the 60s and the 70s, have been somewhat settled. And I think that, you know, what we're trying to certainly teach our students, a much more Avraham method at this point, in terms of not being as afraid to embrace other Jews, not being as afraid to love Jews, coming from a position of strength, that there is something to a Torah true model, that the world is searching for something, and very much we have that. And that we don't need to be quite as afraid, perhaps, or quite as defensive in terms of, you know, bringing people into the tent who are a little bit different than us.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, just Benji, Menachem, you mentioned that you list four different major themes that appear again and again in Rabbi Lam's speaking and writing on these topics, that young rabbis should feel pride in their choice of career, that they have to be committed to their ongoing growth in Torah throughout their lives and their careers, that they have to lead with integrity, they have to be bold, they have to stand up for their values. And finally, this idea of outreach, which you point to as something that has long been overlooked in Rabbi Lam's teachings. And that's quite interesting.
It's been overlooked in our community. Again, right. You know, we have to have a realistic approach, where everything is b'siyata d'shmaya, but a realistic approach of the fact that, you know, many Jews will be very difficult to reach. But I think that the YU community has not done enough to try to reach out. And again, reaching out can mean a lot of things. We believe more in educating Jews rather than trying to necessarily, quote unquote, make them from, or to make them undergo radical changes. But in that sense, whether the perch is a shul and trying to reach everyone in the area, or a school and trying to reach everyone there, or more classic pieces I mentioned in my speech, you know, kol hakavod to those who are a little bit more to the right, to the more yeshivish community, who do so much outreach on campuses. But it would make sense that people that have a college education might also be on college campuses trying to get people to closer to Judaism. Again, no fault to those who are doing it without that. But I think that has been overlooked in Rabbi Lam's speeches, and I think it's been somewhat overlooked in our community. And I think that we need to do more. We need to do more to be able to reach out at this point.
And Benji.
Yeah, I was going to say that to add to Rob Menachem's wise and trenchant words and analysis, that, you know, if we think of history as the study of continuities and discontinuities, right? Sometimes we can see the changes coming and sometimes we're surprised by those changes. But Rabbi Lam, throughout his career and the model that he presented himself and tried to raise up in for our yeshiva and for our students and within the yeshiva university as well, as one of adaptive leadership. But what I would suggest is that Rabbi Lam felt you had to be prepared for adaptive leadership. So he always emphasized making learning part of a Rav's daily routine, even when sometimes it feels there's no time for learning, despite our calling and love of Torah. And you also have to engage in generative scholarship. So you have to be the teacher and the scholar. Right, Rabbi Lam also helped professionalize the rabbinate in response to the expectations of the time. And Ritz continues to do a wonderful job in training rabbis who are not only Talmidei Chachamim, but are skilled and trained up for the skill sets needed for the active rabbinate. And so you have to have a wide array of talents and skills, and then figure out how to adapt them to the hour at hand and to the needs of that particular generation. Sometimes that's predictable, but sometimes, you know, that change happens quite quickly, or the challenge is unanticipated. We all experienced this during the recent pandemic, right? So how do you then have the resources, the reservoir of skills that we could call upon to adapt to the challenges at hand? And Rabbi Lam is, as we know, right, whether it comes under the categories of Torah Umada and the expansive penumbra of those two pillars, right, to be well studied, well trained, really not a jack of all trades, but to have at least a foundation and a wide array of skill sets and knowledge bases.
That actually reminds me of something that's kind of hidden between the lines of the title of your essay, which is called "The Rabbinate as Calling and Challenge." I think that I may have actually crafted the title of that essay. It's a prerogative that editors take to themselves, and it was actually a reference to an old volume that was published by the RCA, our publisher, the Rabbinate as Calling and Vocation, edited by Rabbi Basil Herring, which must have come out also around 30 years ago. And it was a collection of essays by rabbis in the field, each one outlining one aspect of their job: the rabbi as preacher, the rabbi as scholar, the rabbi as organizational CEO man, the rabbi as fundraiser, the rabbi as ambassador to the community at large, the rabbi as lamdin, the rabbi as posek. It's a very important volume. I'm not sure if people still reference that book, or if it's even known by the young rabbis, Menachem. Perhaps it should be, or perhaps we need an updated version of the book, because I remember reading it as a smicha student, and really gaining an appreciation for the complexities of this job. To be a successful rabbi in a community, even as an educator or in other walks, it requires a constellation of talents that nobody could possibly possess. Some have more, some have greater riches of talents, but there's so many things, and the degree to which you can compensate or be aided by those around you who are hoping and aiding in your success, it will be the mark of the impact that you have. There's no doubt that Rabbi Lam was blessed with a multitude of talents in many things, but perhaps more than anything else, you know, even more than fundraising and his heroic and historic achievement in keeping Yeshiva University solvent at a time when that was not necessarily obviously the case. There is a parallel universe in which history took a different turn, and I shudder to think what would have happened to American Orthodoxy had that been the case. But beyond any of his other talents, there can be no doubt that his singular position as the so-called unrepentant darshan, right, the speaker, the orator par excellence, you know, is one that comes out again and again in almost every essay of the 35 essays in our volume, memorializing him. This is a topic that comes up again and again and again, and you each examined his oral presentations. Among the things that he says in that well-known essay, The Unrepentant Confessions of an Unrepentant Darshan, which you both reference, is a kind of defense of the drasha as an art form. He feared that it was being cheapened. He feared that it was being lessened, that people were, instead of preparing a proper sermon, which he may have conceived in a certain kind of rigid template, he feared people were getting up and saying over Lumdis. They were saying Shirei Torah, for which clearly there is a place and a role and a time, but that's not what the sermon ought to be, he thought. He thought by doing so, we were abrogating our responsibility as darshanim to give a particular kind of message to the community at that particular moment on Shabbat morning and other occasions. So I'd like for you each to reflect, we all benefited from having heard him firsthand on occasion, and certainly we can access him through recordings and written versions of those sermons. I'd like you to reflect for a moment on Rabbi Lam as Darshan, but also on the state of the field. What is the state of the sermon? You're both people that are tasked with doing this on a regular basis. How is the sermon? What role is it playing today? And what does it need? Where does it need improvement?
Rav Benji, you want to take this first?
Okay, I could. Thank you. First of all, Rabbi Lam, as an aesthetic, positive appreciation for a modality of Torah study, appreciated the art of the drasha. And in his time, in part due to his advocacy and exemplary practice, but he was an advocate for maintaining that art form. It has changed, and the adaptive leadership that he modeled would also require that be adapted to. Now, would Rabbi Norman Lam be tweeting or podcasting or Facebook posting today? It's really hard to say, because he is a product in of his own time. But what I would focus on, right, is he thought that the drasha, as an art form, as a something that had to be attended to, was a vehicle to convey a sense of mission and purpose and education of essential values in all of its refractions, during its delivery. And Rabbi Lam, as a spiritual leader, was very much about, growing a sense of purpose, of enlisting people in a particular mission, and having people be able to identify with that and convey it and support it. So when you, Rob Jeff, just referred to his fundraising, right? He was able to be a fundraiser, not because he, had an MBA in fundraising, but he was able to communicate a sense of purpose and mission and urgency that was able to inspire people to invest in that. And that's where I would, locate his success. So he saw the drasha not only as an aesthetic form, which I do believe he saw and he took great pride in, but also as a sufficient vehicle and a necessary vehicle to give that sense of mission, purpose, and inspire people.
I think we know that he took it, that he saw it as an art form in and of itself. And he would sit down Motzei Shabbos and write and write and write and write and get the whole thing down. I think the drasha is under siege again. I think that certainly the COVID pandemic has really, really affected the ability of rabbis. First of all, you're speaking at five different minyanim, and they're home minyanim that don't want to have the rabbi speaking. And we've reverted to these sort of 5-minute snippets, a little idea, a little thought. But you see, the challenge with a little idea and a little thought is that it makes the rabbi seem like someone who has little ideas and little thoughts. The first thing I say to when I introduce the homiletics workshop, which I've discussed to do with the senior students here, is that on the one hand, you don't change anyone with a drasha. Maybe some of Rabbi Lam's drushas were able to get people to say, wow, I'm going to go out and change my life. I said, that doesn't happen. Maybe that happened with youth work. You know, we certainly did enough of that, where we had people in front of us who changed their whole life in 2 minutes, for better or for worse, because of a powerful speech. But I said, even though typical Balapatam don't change their lives because of a single speech, the goal of drushos, and the more masterful they are, the more they can be impactful, is to paint the rabbi as someone who's worth coming to when you're searching for answers, when you're searching for a decision, when you're searching for help making a decision. The rabbi makes a difference, not from the pulpit, but with his arm around someone at a shiva or at a bedside, or when someone comes to you and says, I don't know what's next for me. I don't know what's next for me professionally. I don't know what's next for my kids. The question is, what makes them want to sit with that rabbi? So there are a number of things. But week in and week out, the rabbi's drasha is an opportunity to let the people know, I get it. I have a sense of what your next step might be. I have a certain amount of insight. Again, you don't want to say that in an egotistical way, but that's what the drasha does over the course of 70 drushas a year. 70 drushas a year are an opportunity to let people know that it's worthwhile to talk to the rabbi. And it's in those little conversations, when they talk to the rabbi, that lives are really changed, that the directions are made. And I think that losing the art form of a full-blown drasha, a full-blown thought-out idea presented eloquently, presented with Torah ideas, but then with practical ideas of how it makes sense of what the hashlachot of the drasha are, that the rabbi can say, I get it that it's difficult, and yet X, Y, and Z. I think that positions the rabbi for his success. And as Benji was saying, I think that positions Rabbi Lam for his fundraising. In other words, the ability to create and present a vision in those words and in that way that opens the doors for the conversations where you really make a difference with people. Mm-hmm. And I think it is very much a dying art. And I think it's a challenge. I tell the guys that we should not be joking about rabbis' sermons being boring. Mm-hmm. We should do whatever we can do to get rid of those stereotypes and those things, because it's in essence a chil Hashem. When people hear a poor drasha, they don't think merely that the rabbi doesn't have what to say. They think the Torah doesn't have what to say. And I tell the guy, that's true Shabbos morning from the pulpit. That's true when you get up at a Shevin Brachas and you just ramble on as the yeshiva guy talking at your friend's Shalom's Ufruf. Every time we speak, we need to prepare and realize that we're representing the Ribon Shalom and his Torah. I think Rabbi Lam understood that's what was being given over.
We've been talking with two of the authors from Tradition's recent Rabbi Norman Lam Memorial Volume. Rabbi Dr. Benjamin Samuels wrote The Rabbinate as Calling and Challenge, about Rabbi Lam's essays on rabbinic leadership, and with Rabbi Menachem Penner, who authored Prophets in Israel, The Spirit of the Rabbinate, exploring his speeches and drashot at the Chagei Smicha. Visit traditiononline.org to order your own copy of the Rabbi Norman Lam Memorial Volume, or to subscribe to our journal. I'll just end by echoing the conclusion of your essay, Benji, which explored this idea of Talmidei Chachamim Marbin Shalom Ba'olam. It's the task of the Talmid Chacham, of the rabbi, to increase peace and harmony in the world. And channeling Rabbi Lam's message on this, you write, this is the preeminent halakha one affirms daily. Torah scholars, rabbis, increase peace in the world through the courageous and creative harmonization of truth and kindness. There is no more sublime nor challenging calling.
That to be a Talmud Chacham, you need lumdus. To be a Yerei Shamayim, you need amuna. To be a teacher, you have to love your pupils and your subject matter. But to be a Rav, a rabbi in the classical Jewish sense, you need all these and much more. You need the gift of leadership.